This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Hing.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to Medicine and Health with Dr. Paul Anderson. This is a show about opening up the often mysterious world of how doctors think. The goal? To empower the listener to gain access to the best health care possible.
Good day and welcome to Medicine and Health with Dr. Paul Anderson. And I am Dr. Paul Anderson, coming to you from Seattle, Washington, and Anderson Medical Specialty Associates, our integrative medical clinic here in North Seattle. Our topic today is one that there seems to be a lot of both interest and a bit of misinformation or confusion about. So thought this would be a really good one to do a radio topic on. And it's in the series on toxicity. And toxins, of course, are things that the human body doesn't appreciate. And they can be anywhere from a little bit of a problem to potentially deadly. So toxins are always, you know, something people are concerned with. Today we want to focus on the kind of toxins that we see that are under the grouping called heavy metals. So when we think about heavy metals, you could maybe think about certain type of rock groups or other things like that. But in the world of heavy metals and toxicity that humans have, what you're thinking about are metals that are in the environment. There's a few of these that are, you know, more environmental, and then some are more man-made or medically exposed, let's say. But they're things that when they get into an animal or a human will cause great disruption within the system. And there's a number of reasons we want to talk about for that. But just to sort of set the discussion, the big picture is we'll want to talk about what things are considered toxic heavy metals, number one. Then we want to talk about how would we encounter those things? How would they get into my body if they're not supposed to be there? And then the broad topic of what do they do once they're inside? What kind of problems can they create? And so we have some people who have written in questions. We have some patient cases to go over and and to explain about these heavy metals and how they might affect somebody. So this bigger topic of not only how in the world would these bad things get into me, but also what would they do once they're inside is a very interesting and a very broad one. So I want to spend some time with that. So to start off, we get a lot of questions, of course, at the clinic about, well, what do you treat and have you ever heard of this, et cetera. And so I wanted to use one of the emails that we got with respect to heavy metals, because it fits right into the beginning of the topic here. And the person writes in, and they essentially say, dear Dr. Anderson, I was looking at your clinic website, and I see that you do work with toxicity. And you have patients that I know personally who have been to your clinic and worked on heavy metal toxicity. My questions are, what are heavy metals and what kind of effects can they have on my body? So help me understand what these things called heavy metals are. Well, it's a really good and fair question. The ones that we've all heard about probably the most would be things like lead or mercury or maybe uranium. Those are all considered heavy metals that are potentially toxic to humans and animals. There's other ones which you will have heard of, cadmium, for instance, which is found in a lot of batteries and things like that. Cadmium can have very specific problems once it's inside of a human that we'll talk about a little bit later. But then there's other ones, too, that we may think less about. So there are forms of things that we get exposed to sometimes, and they may be a little more rare to be exposed to. But for instance, platinum is a heavy metal, and you would think, well, it's a very expensive heavy metal, so how in the world would I get exposed to platinum? The biggest exposure to platinum that we see is people who have platinum-based chemotherapy for their cancer treatment. And so platinum is often elevated there. And you think, well, why in the world would they use platinum inside of a chemotherapy? Well, the reason is that the platinum-based chemotherapies are cytotoxic. They're cell-killing. And the platinum is a part of what allows the chemotherapy agent to go and kill cells. And like we've talked about on some of our other cancer-related shows, what we want is we want the cancer cells to die, and we don't want too many of our cells to die. So in the case of platinum, sometimes years later, people will want to do detox after they've survived their cancer just to sort of get some of the old stuff out of there. There's also things such as thallium and thorium and other unusual-sounding names. Some of these come from the rocks in the ground, like uranium is in a lot of rocks and areas. The other that's very common and is in most water supplies is arsenic. And we've all, you know, heard of arsenic and old lace and arsenic and poisoning and all the old detective books. Well, that's because arsenic has been used for many, many, many things for well over 100 years, probably well over 200 or 300 years. And one of the reasons it's in a lot of groundwater is arsenical or arsenic-based pesticides are very, very commonly used, and certainly more commonly in the past. So they're sort of broadly sprayed and broadly applied in agriculture, and then the arsenical compounds go into the ground, and they get recycled through groundwater, and you can find in many parts of the groundwater arsenic. And so arsenic, obviously, in high amounts would be a deadly poison, just like mercury in high amounts is a deadly poison, or, you know, many of these other things. Uranium is a deadly poison, potentially. So it comes to the next question then of, okay, so these, we know what the names of these heavy metals are, and we've all heard about times and instances where these heavy metals have gone and created some kind of problem for somebody. And like we talked about in the other toxicity topics that we've done, you want to think about toxicity as a spectrum. And so on one end is deadly poison. So certainly if you went and you found some mercury and ingested it, ate it, you could actually die from acute mercury poisoning. You could die very quickly. Same with high doses of arsenic. It may take you a little bit longer to die, but you will assuredly die. Or lead or any of these other things. So there's a potential very, very toxicity that's very high. And then there's what we would call kind of in the middle, which would be often in pediatrics. What we used to see a lot was, you know, a child would start to have behavioral issues and a lot of maybe skin problems, etc. And you would find out that the child had been eating paint chips, and the paint chips had lead paint. And so the reason I'm classifying that in the middle is it's a high exposure that's not deadly right away, and the exposure builds because the kid is sort of behind the scenes, parent doesn't know it, and they're out eating, you know, the paint chips. And so their lead levels build up, and then the child gets very, very ill. So usually, because there's treatment available for that, the child doesn't die, but it has to be recognized. So they have an acute toxicity that goes up, and eventually somebody sees, oh, this is a problem. Now, why would that be more in children than in adults? Well, most adults don't eat paint chips, and it's, you know, it's just that easy and that basic. We recently had a patient come in who, unbeknownst to them, the ground, the dirt around their house was had been toxic since, I think, the 1930s or 40s, they figured out, because the area had had some kind of industry on it before it became residential. And there was, you know, back in those days, there wasn't a lot of care taken to what you did with toxic things, and it was just dumped into the ground. They took the, whatever the business was, went away, and they built houses on it. And they started to notice that their child, who was around 6 years old, and they'd lived in the house this whole child's life, started to exhibit certain symptoms that were neurological, and they had some skin issues, and they had their child tested, and they had some metals, and so they had their ground tested and found it was very, very high. So they actually had to have people come in and take their dirt out and replace it and all of that business, and the child had to be treated. So these sorts of exposures are pretty common. You hear about them in pediatrics. In adults, usually adults are a little more careful, but that's not always the case. We've had people with very high lead levels, for instance, who were bullet reloaders, you know, people involved in using lead and other metals in industry. Sometimes this would happen. A long time ago, when I was first in practice, I practiced near a battery factory, and those workers there, all most of them had very high levels of lead because of the type of work they did. So when you talk about toxicity, you want to think about, okay, there's deadly toxicity, then there's this sub-threshold toxicity that builds up over time and will create a potential deadly situation. If it is not noticed, and, you know, in the case of a child, if the child isn't, you know, being treated appropriately. But then there's everything else, and that's what we would call more of a subclinical toxic metal exposure and a subclinical toxic metal illness. And the way that we like to think about these are not usually somebody eating paint chips. It's not somebody getting exposed accidentally to, you know, a whole can of arsenic pesticide or something. These are little exposures usually that build up over time. And so the thing that starts to happen with these people is they don't have the big classic symptoms right away, because they don't have a big amount of poison going in their body. But over time, the exposures that they have at lower levels to some of these heavy metals can create health problems down the road. And so we've seen people where possibly their exposures were from when they were in their teenage to young 20s and 30s, and they're 50 or 60 having symptoms. And so how in the world would that work? What does your body do once these things get inside, and how do they how are they processed by the body? It would seem like, you know, if the human body or all mammals, you know, don't like these things, they're not supposed to be in your body, that there would be a way to process them to get rid of them. And one of the things in toxicology about toxins is that there is usually a threshold at which a low amount is processed by the body in one way or another, and higher amounts or built-up amounts can't be processed. And that's part of what makes the substance so toxic, is the buildup over time and the inability of a body to deal with it. So if we want to think about that, the overwhelming consistency that you need to consider is none of the heavy metals, with very rare exceptions, are supposed to be in the body. So we're not really supposed to have lead or mercury, you know, or, you know, thallium or something floating around in our body. The next logical step then is, if they're not supposed to be in there, and we know that they're toxic at high levels, what do they do? Well, at the very least, you can categorize them in the world of, these are not good for you. So heavy metals are generally not good for a person. And so why is that? What do they wind up doing? Well, we're going to head into a break in just a minute, but we'll kind of set this up, and right after the break, we'll talk more in depth about what these things do. But when you're thinking about these heavy metals, the first thing to think is that the reason that they're poisonous one of the biggest problems the body has is they look like things that aren't poisonous. And so if you think about a metal, all metals are in the mineral family. And so whether it's lead or mercury or chromium or zinc or calcium or magnesium, they're all in the mineral family. And minerals, by definition, chemically, have things in common with one another. And so one of the bases of the toxicity of heavy metals is that they wind up going in and they kind of fake out the body so that the body is confused by them, and then the body doesn't know what to do with this substance that's gone inside. So it's sort of like a Trojan horse that goes up and it looks like one thing and then it delivers a different thing. The heavy metals get into the body and they go into the same processes and pathways that the nutrient minerals, or nutrient metals you could call them, things like potassium or magnesium or calcium or sodium or chromium or zinc, selenium, all the good stuff we're supposed to have in us. Those binding sites for those things can be taken up by the heavy metal. And you don't know what's going on, but it starts to really change the way that the body works. So when we come back from the break, what we'll talk about then is, well, what does that look like? How do those things change function? And what would it do to my health? So we're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Anderson Medical Specialty Associates is the clinic that Dr. Anderson founded to provide high-quality, integrative medical care to those with cancer and chronic illnesses. In over 20 years of work with this patient population and research into the best practices for treatment, this clinic provides the highest level of care. Their focuses include all types of cancer, autoimmune diseases such as multiple sclerosis and lupus, as well as chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and chronic infections such as Lyme and Lyme-like illness. Their only goal is to help each person find the best path to health for their individual needs. Located in Seattle, Washington, visit the clinic website, www.amsa1.com, or call the clinic at 206-629-2186.
And we're back with Medicine and Health with Dr. Paul Anderson today, and we're talking about toxicity in general, and specifically we're talking about the toxicity that is created by heavy metals. And so we've talked in the first section of the program about is why are these things toxic? And the, you know, the big picture answer to that, of course, is that they are metals, which are minerals, basically, and they get into the body. And instead of having a purpose like other minerals do, which would be things like magnesium and calcium helping to run your cells or your nerves or something, these heavy metals get in and they go in the same location, and then they wind up having a different effect. So think of it this way. If magnesium is supposed to go, and magnesium is supposed to go and help the electrochemical activity of your cell work, and then let's say it was substituted by a heavy metal, what's going to happen is that that metal goes and it can't operate the same way that magnesium operates, and so the body gets a confusing signal. Now, there's another really big way that these heavy metals will affect almost everything, and that is that they go and they sit in either an enzyme system or in a receptor site, and they cause dysfunction to the enzyme system or the receptor site. And so just really quickly to say how that would happen, Well, it follows the same rule that we said just a minute ago, which is the mineral world, minerals in general, are used for biological processes. And so if I have a heavy metal that's a toxin, it will go and it will occupy a place where the normal mineral structure will sit. So in an enzyme, what an enzyme is supposed to do is an enzyme is supposed to take one thing in your body and help it turn into another thing that is probably more useful. So the enzymes wind up going and they take a precursor, a substrate, and they turn it into a product. So examples of this would be converting an inactive hormone to an active hormone. Or real common examples would be your brain runs on enzyme systems that turn amino acids from your diet into neurotransmitters that help you think. So when you're thinking about this, what they do is the enzyme will take tryptophan and help turn it into serotonin, or it'll take tyrosine and the amino acid and help turn it into dopamine and norepinephrine, etc. So the enzyme, how does it work? Well, it works by binding with a B vitamin and a mineral together, and the enzyme and the B vitamin and the mineral then get activated and turn the substrate, like the amino acid, into the neurotransmitter. So if we go with this substitution idea with heavy metals, let's say that you have a heavy metal bind at the enzyme where the trace mineral is supposed to bind. So let's say, as is really common, you have a zinc-dependent enzyme system. So zinc is supposed to go there with a B vitamin and turn the enzyme on so it makes something in your brain. What if you had a metal that went and sat where the zinc is supposed to sit? If that metal is anything other than zinc, what happens is instead of the enzyme working, the enzyme just quits working. And in toxicology and in biochemistry, heavy metals are considered irreversible toxins to these enzyme systems. So when we think about heavy metals having a health effect, one of the reasons they have these weird body-wide health effects is really because of this enzyme interruption or enzyme destruction that they can do. And it's because they substitute for the nutrient mineral that's supposed to be there. So in a little bit, when we talk about downstream body effects, you want to think about this, that this enzyme disruption, your body can't proceed without enzymes working. And if the enzymes are all full of heavy metals, you're not going to have a lot of good enzyme activity, and then your function's going to go down. So what's another way that these heavy metals can be toxic to you? Well, kind of like the idea in the enzyme where it substitutes for a nutrient, the other thing that can happen is the actual receptor on your cell can be disrupted by the heavy metal. So what happens is the receptors usually have mineral sites that where like a sodium molecule will bind to it, or a chloride or a calcium or something. And so a heavy metal can just go park itself there where, say, calcium is supposed to be, and it doesn't let the calcium get in. And so then you can't turn on the receptor. That becomes a huge problem. And one of the things that we'll talk about kind of in the downstream effect of this is we get patients sometimes who have symptoms of one problem, and we test that problem that the symptoms match, and they have perfect, perfect lab test. Everything tests out perfect, but they still have symptoms. In many cases, that winds up being something that is disrupting the system that's giving the symptoms, in this case, like hormone disruption. So in a few minutes, we talk about these downstream effects. You really want to keep in mind we've got the enzyme system that can be disrupted by a heavy metal, and that's not good for you because then it doesn't make the right products for your body to use. And then there's also these hormone and receptor disruptions where you've got enough of the hormone, say, and it's supposed to turn a receptor on, but it can't because there's metal sitting on the receptor. And so then it's like you look like you don't have a hormone and it's not working, but in reality, it's there. It just can't work because the toxin is in the way. Now, there's other things that toxins can do too, and those are not good for you either. And those would be things like direct toxicity to an organ system. So the heavy metals are very, very active at the level of the kidneys. And the reason for that is that the kidneys are supposed to eliminate lots and lots of things. But a lot of the things that the kidneys use little transporters for to move back and forth run on these same principles I was telling you about, where like sodium's supposed to go turn it on, or maybe a potassium's supposed to turn it on, or hydrogen or something. And so if you get a big dose of a metal all at once, you wind up having the metal go, and it plugs up the transporter in the kidney. And so one of the reasons that people will die from high acute exposure to heavy metals is their kidneys just shut down. Well, in the long run, when you have these people with subacute, low-level exposures, we see symptoms that sometimes are kidney-based, such as the blood pressure rising over time. Blood pressure rising over time is a pretty predictable effect with lead toxicity, for instance, and certain other heavy metals. So you think about that. Then you think about other organs like your muscles, and well, your heart is a muscle, etc. Well, the muscles and the nerves are the other global kind of all body wide organs that get affected by these toxic materials. And so how does that work? Well, muscles and nerves are what they call excitable tissue. And what that means is they operate on electrochemical gradients. Those electrochemical gradients that make your nerves work and your muscles work are run completely by minerals moving back and forth, creating electrical charges. So calcium and magnesium bouncing back and forth, potassium, sodium bouncing back and forth. Those make your electrical charges for your muscles, your heart, everything that runs your digestive system, and then your nerves. So you could imagine that these heavy metals, when they got there, might create both nerve and muscular problems or neuromuscular issues. And indeed, that happens too. So if you look at things that are listed about heavy metal toxicity, for instance, then you'll see things such as nerve problems like numbness and tingling, or incoordination, or muscle spasms or muscle cramping. So this is other body areas that can really be affected. So the symptoms that people get can literally be almost anything that your body does. And one of the things that happens, just by way of sort of getting the big picture, is if the doctor that you're seeing is not used to assessing people for heavy metals that are toxic, etc., they often will look at the symptoms and ascribe the symptoms to something else, which is reasonable because the symptoms look like another problem. For instance, they may ascribe them to kidney disease, or they might ascribe them to multiple sclerosis or some other thing. And a lot of times, and that's when we get the patient, is when they have been to another specialist, and the specialist says, well, it looks like you have this disease, but your tests all check out fine. And there's no medical evidence that you have this disease, but you have the symptoms. So we should just monitor you, come back in a year, and I'll check on you. Often they'll go and look for other explanations for their symptoms. So we've seen this with people with unexplained blood pressure elevations, unexplained kidney stress, looking like they're going into early kidney failure. We've seen this with people, a lot of people, as I mentioned earlier, who have hormonal difficulties, and it looks like their hormones are very out of balance. But when you test their hormones, the hormones are perfect, but they're not having perfect hormone function. The other ones are those enzyme issues, so liver problems, but also neurological things. Certain types of depression and anxiety can be triggered because the enzymes are not working. So it's one of those things where what you want is you want to seek out a physician who does this sort of work and works with toxicity. And then the next thing is they're going to be looking, and they're going to first rule out, okay, what is it that what is it that your symptoms normally would tell me you have? And so first I need to make sure that's not the problem. So if your symptoms are saying you have a bad hormone imbalance, we need to check the hormones. We need to look at those things. But if they are in balance, then we have something disrupting. If you have a rhythm problem in your heart, and we've looked everywhere and we can't find the cause for the rhythm problem, that could be a toxic event. If you have blood pressure that's been rising over time and there's no apparent reason for it, that could be toxicity. So this leads to the next topic, which is testing and assessment of these problems. So how in the world do we know that these are, you know, going to be a problem at all? And the thing that you want to think about there is that there's a couple of ways to look at testing, and there's a few ways to interpret or misinterpret testing. So when we think about testing, testing is not a perfect science where heavy metals are concerned, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But our next email from a patient who was confused by different information from different doctors, this particular email kind of sets us up for this discussion about testing. And so the email goes, I'm coming in to see you because I have a concern that I've been exposed to lead, and I went and saw my primary care doctor, and they did a blood test. When I went back to see my primary care doctor after the test came in, the doctor said that I did not have lead toxicity because there was no lead on my test for blood. He gave me a copy of the blood test, and I see on it that it says lead, and then there is a level, and then I have a certain number in my blood, and then it says normal ranges start at 10 and less, and toxic ranges start above 10, and my number is 5. So my doctor says this is normal and I shouldn't worry about it. What will be different about your testing and your assessment based on this particular problem I'm having? Well, this is a really good question, and it goes to this discussion that we very early in the radio program talked about, which is remember the spectrum of toxicity. And here's the way you want to think about it, because we don't always get enlightened to the way that doctors are assessing and thinking about things. On the one end of the spectrum, where you have either a deadly event where somebody, drinks arsenic or drinks, mercury or something like that, and they can die or they can come close to death. Or you have the child who's eaten a whole bunch of the lead paint chips and is really, really lead toxic. At that end of the spectrum, that is the area where these blood tests that are done commonly were developed for. That's called acute toxicity. So at the end of the spectrum of acute toxicity, the blood tests will tell you if your blood is basically full of these metals. So when we think about the person who has at the other end of the spectrum, maybe a slow chronic exposure, maybe exposures throughout their lifetime that have built up, is that person going to have the same amount of metal in their blood as the person who just was exposed to a large dose of arsenic or a large dose of lead or something? Well, no. And so the blood tests we use in our office a lot for screening, but the blood tests are really relevant to the deadly or near deadly acute toxicities. Deadly and near deadly acute toxicities with heavy metals should be treated in a hospital, and you would have a very high level in your blood, and the toxicologist that would treat you there. The toxicologist in the hospital will not be interested in anything other than deadly acute toxicity. And that's because in North America, their toxicology only recognizes you when you're near, when you are near death or organ destruction. So the blood tests are good screening tests, but they really don't talk about this chronic thing that goes on. And so when we think about testing, then how do I assess somebody who's had old exposure and it might be bothering them right now? Well, what we do in our office most commonly is we go through the process like we told you a minute ago, and that is, first, what are the symptoms? What's bothering you about your body and the way it's reacting. Is it things, you know, like you have anxiety or depression that's not treatable through normal means, or your blood pressure's been going up and you've been trying everything and it's still going up, or you have hormonal symptoms that don't seem to match your hormones? So we first make sure it's not some other disease. We screen people for, you know, things like kidney damage, and you screen for hormone balance, or you screen people for, you know, multiple sclerosis, et cetera. But if those things come out and that's not your problem, then the next step is to say, okay, your screening blood tests for lead and arsenic and mercury showed small amounts that are not considered to be dangerous, but they're floating around in your blood. Is there another type of test or assessment that could look for deeper levels of these metals that may still be giving you the symptoms? So we're going to roll into a break here in just a moment. But after the break, in the last section, what we want to talk about is how can we test to more globally assess the chronically exposed person? And then once we find that out, what kind of things can a person do that are going to help with these chronic exposures? So we're not really going to talk about the acute, I'm going to die tomorrow kind of toxicity. What we want to talk about after the break really is the subacute chronic exposed person, and how do we clean that body up after that problem. All right, so we're going to head into a break right now, and we'll be right back with Medicine and Health with Dr. Paul Anderson.
Anderson Medical Specialty Associates is the clinic that Dr. Anderson founded to provide high-quality, integrative medical care to those with cancer and chronic illnesses. In over 20 years of work with this patient population and research into the best practices for treatment, this clinic provides the highest level of care. Their focuses include all types of cancer, autoimmune diseases such as multiple sclerosis and lupus, as well as chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and chronic infections such as Lyme and Lyme-like illness. Their only goal is to help each person find the best path to health for their individual needs. Located in Seattle, Washington, visit the clinic website, www.amsa1.com, or call the clinic at 206-629-2186.
And we're back with Medicine and Health with Dr. Paul Anderson, and today we're talking about toxicity, and specifically heavy metal toxicity. So what we have sort of built up to for this last section of the program is we've had a few people who've written in emails, and I've read those talking about heavy metals, and there's a lot of confusion about it. And the concept that we've been working on is with toxicity of any kind, but especially heavy metals, you think of it in a continuum. And so the toxicologist, which is the medical specialist who is involved in treating and assessing toxicity, is interested in the far end of the spectrum where organ damage, hardcore disease, and death will ensue from the toxicity. And what we said was is that the screening tests that are used, blood tests for heavy metals, are really related to that end of the spectrum. So when you get your blood drawn, or your child gets a blood draw, and they check them for blood mercury and lead and arsenic and all that, what they're looking for is, are you acutely toxic at a level that may create organ damage or death? If you are, then you will be treated in the hospital by the toxicology team, and they will have certain treatments for that. The problem is that most people are not exposed at that level. Certainly, if you have a high exposure and high blood levels, you need to seek the counsel of a toxicologist, because that's what they do. But at the other end of the spectrum, you have people with low-level exposure or chronic exposure. And what we were working on right before the break is, well, how in the world do you know? What do you test to do that? So like I said, we first rule out that there's not some other disease causing the symptoms. And, you know, so we make sure that there's not, something like multiple sclerosis or heart disease or some other, thing that's going on. And then we say, well, symptomatically, this could match a toxic exposure, a chronic one. So we do the blood test to make sure it's not a super high blood level. And then we do the other testing. Now, what is the other testing? There's a number of other ways to test, but the common method used is to do two urine tests in proximity to one another. One is a plain urine test, which you collect, and there's a lab kit for it and everything. And you've done nothing. It's just your urine goes to the lab, and they do an assessment for heavy metals. The next one is what we call a post-challenge urine, and then we compare the two. A post-challenge urine, you would be given a prescription for a particular substance that you would take, either orally or it would be given to you by an intravenous infusion, and then you collect your urine after that. And so the challenge is that I have one urine value with no challenge, so we look at that, and then we look at your urine after we give you something that would normally help the body eliminate a heavy metal. And these are things called chelating substances. There's other substances that do this. And so by comparing the two, we can see two things. One is if you have a high level of a metal on an unchallenged, the first urine you did, that means you're probably being exposed right now, either through your water or food or some other source. If you have no high levels on your unchallenged one, your urine, and then we challenge you and you have a big high level of, mercury and arsenic or something like that, what it means is your body is not doing well at getting rid of those things, and the challenge agent that you were given moves the metal out of your body. So it's shown on the second test. And sometimes what we see is on the pre-test, the one with no challenge, there'll be one metal there, and that one is more of an acute ongoing exposure. And then on the challenge test, that metal is still there, but it has two or three other friends with it that are not being acutely exposed but are still a problem for you. So these challenge tests are, and again, there's no perfect test for heavy metals because they live and hide all over inside your body. But these things are not good for your body. And so the testing is there to say, is it a small, medium, or large problem we're looking at? So usually in our practice, when we get people who are not at the end of the trail deadly toxicity, but they have signs and symptoms that might lead us to believe we should look, we do those three things. We do a blood screening just to make sure there isn't a super high acute thing. Then we do an unchallenged urine to see if there's an acute exposure going on every day. And then we do a challenge urine to see what the body's not releasing. And so this whole thing about your body not releasing things goes back to another really good email that we got from a patient. So just to kind of set this up, this is a patient who had come in, and they it's a situation. These are two adult siblings who have lived together for the last 10 years. They share a house. And it's just the two of them. They grow a garden in the backyard. They have well water. They do all this stuff, and so they're exposed pretty much to the same thing. And interestingly enough, which makes this a little better story, both of them actually work in the same place. So they've worked for the same company for many, many years. So their life and their location and their exposure and their food is really pretty much identical, plus their siblings. And so the person writes in and says, a few months ago, both my brother and I came to your office, and we were concerned about heavy metals, etc. And you did a workup on us, which was great. And when the workups were all done and assessed, it was kind of confusing, being that my brother and I live together and we work in the same location and have for years, and essentially we share a house, share food, share everything. And yet my brother's levels of chronic exposure for heavy metals were almost nothing, and mine were very high. How in the world can this happen when we've essentially had very similar environmental exposure and life circumstances for our whole lives? Now, just for some background, these two people are in their early 40s, so they've been on the earth for about four decades, and so they've had some exposure. Well, to answer this, the first thing is everybody gets exposed. All right, you can't live in the world today without some exposure to a toxin or a heavy metal. But what we're finding now, and there's a lot of ongoing research about this now that we have more information about genetics and genomics, which we've talked about on the program before, is you can actually inherit gene dysfunction in an area. There's a number of areas, but the one that's got a lot of research, it's called metallothionine. And in the metallothionine system, if you inherit the wrong genes, instead of exposing the body to a metal and urinating it out with exposure, if you have dysfunctions in these metallothionine genes, they get confused and they save the metal. And so you literally see, like this email brings up, two people with the same exposure and one has held on to the metals and the other one hasn't. And you think well, that's very, very bizarre and very strange, because you would think two humans, they have the same kind of body, they're both humans. If I expose them to the same amount of metal, they should both have the same amount inside their body when all is said and done. And the reason that the research started with these metallothionines is it was noticed that you'd have populations drinking the same water and exposed to the same stuff, and some of the people would have high levels of mercury or lead or something, and the other people wouldn't. So they started looking for what explains this. There must be some genetic or enzyme difference. And indeed, that is the case. So sometimes, now that we can do genetic testing, we may go looking for those things. But basically, you see it like with these two people. You got one person who holds on to metals, another person doesn't. So that leads us to our final section, really, which is, okay, so we found out that we're not going to have deadly toxicity, but we're going to have unhealthy toxicity. We know it's probably chronic. We've done the screening tests, and ideally we've got a blood test and a plain urine test and then a challenge urine test. We compare them all together. What do you do about it? Well, there's a number of things. First is, if you're what you would call a collector of metals, you don't eliminate well, you need to do a number of steps. And this is something that is something that you need coordinated by a physician who is trained to do this. And the reason is that getting metals out of the body is a stress on the system. So if you go too quickly, it can actually make you sick. Or if you do it in the wrong order, it can make you sick. So we want to do this and get rid of the bad stuff without making you sick. The ways that are done are global things. They, in the world of toxicology, they have this idea of depuration, which means getting all the body involved in getting rid of junk. So getting you to sweat, making sure you're well hydrated, you're eating a lot of fiber, you know, things are moving through your body. So that's one thing. People do saunas, they exercise, do all that sort of stuff. The next thing, though, is you want to have what I consider kind of a push-pull effect. So we want to move the bad metals to a place they can be eliminated from the body. But in doing so, we want to do two things. And that number one is to replace the bad metals with good ones, good minerals. And number two is we want to protect the body as the bad stuff leaves. And so when we build these treatment protocols for people, we consider how bad is the chronic toxicity, how deep is it, so to speak? Does it look like it's been there a long time? There's lots of it, or is it just a little bit? And then how strong is the person who's going to undergo this? And so what we wind up doing then is setting up a system where we have organ protection. So we give natural substances that would help to protect and help the liver and kidneys eliminate well. And there's good things you can do for that. Usually a little bit of digestive support, because the digestive system gets involved in getting rid of things as well. We also then are going to cycle between two things, and this is that push-pull I was talking about. One is going to be the chelator or the eliminating substance, and that basically is one of a number of things that helps to grab onto the bad stuff and move it out of your body in a safe manner. So a chelator or a chelating-like substance is going to literally grab on. Chelate means claw, okay, it means grab on. So a chelator is literally going to grab on and help move out of the body a bad thing. They have to be dosed very specifically. They're dosed by your body size and your kidney function, lots of things. And this is why it's not something you want to do sort of just at home on your own. You want to have a doctor who's managing that for you. So that's the pull. That's taking the bad stuff out. We've already given you all the stuff to protect your organs and keep them happy. And then the push part is going to be on the days where you're not taking the chelating, the removing substance, you're going to be taking minerals and other nutrients that replete or put back in the stuff that's taken out of the body. So when you remove a heavy metal, you always incidentally remove good minerals with it. It's just the way that the process works. So again, the doctor who's giving you these procedures and these sort of treatments should be trained and should understand, if I'm giving you chelator X and it's taking metals out of your body, it's very well established in the research that chelator X also will remove good stuff like copper and zinc and stuff. And so I need to know that I need to be putting those into you to backfill what's leaving along with the chelator. And the bottom line of all this is, if you have this well-rounded program where the whole body is involved in getting to detox, where your doctor is giving you protection for your organs so that during the detox they are protected and kept in good shape, and your doctor is doing this push-pull thing where, yes, they're pulling the bad stuff out, but they're also putting in good minerals to replace and good nutrient substances to keep your system running, you can go through a detox protocol with usually very minimal types of effects or side effects that are bad. If you just do the pull part, you just do a chelator, which a lot of people do. They order them on the internet and just do that. You can deplete yourself of good minerals and good nutrients rather rapidly and create other problems. So when we're thinking about this, the first thing is assessment. The next thing then is matching that assessment up to the problems that you're complaining with. And then the most important part is building a treatment protocol that's good for your body, that helps move the bad stuff out, but make sure to replace it with good stuff. And that becomes the most important part of the treatment process. Now, the treatment can take a short amount of time in some people, say 3 or 4 months is a short amount of time. And in people who have old long-term exposures, they may do cycling of treatment on and off over the course of 1 to 2 to 3 years, depending on how deep the problem goes. So that's another reason that you want a well-trained, well-experienced physician who does detoxification and assessment to be kind of running the show and watching your labs and all of that, because there's a lot to keep track of. It's very hard to do on yourself, and many of the substances also are by prescription only, or maybe are even injectable substances. So today we've been talking about toxicity, and specifically heavy metal toxicity. And I'm Dr. Paul Anderson from Anderson Medical Specialty Associates in Seattle, Washington. And we've been speaking about how do we get these heavy metals, how can we find out if we have them, what kind of effects can they have on our health, and then the most important thing is, what can you do about heavy metals if they are a part of your health issues? At Anderson Medical Specialty Associates, we have doctors here who are specifically trained in the assessment and treatment of toxicity, including heavy metals, and there are many other physicians who are able to do that. It's been my pleasure speaking with you today. I am Dr. Paul Anderson, and this is Medicine and Health with Dr. Paul Anderson. I'll see you again on the radio in 1 week.
You've been listening to Medicine and Health with your host, Dr. Paul Anderson. Visit the clinic website at www.amsa1.com or call the clinic at 206-629-1000. 2186.